There's this sort of like end-to-end process of like start with a couple questions to a deck, to a website, to a little wizard that can like help you modify a couple different things.
I hope you're not tired of all the AI, because unfortunately the answer to it is that we use a lot of AI to make.
Why did I know that was coming?
I've never taken a computer science class in my life. I don't know anything about computer science. Prior to ChatGPT, I never particularly programmed anything. ChatGPT has been completely revolutionizing to me of being able to write code. And I for like programmers, I know that what I create is not per se code, but does function, it does work, and it does deliver a result.
This is truly wild. Nicholas, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Dan.
I'm excited to have you. So for people who don't know, you're a close friend of mine. You are the general partner of the incubator Prehype, which actually incubated, or really was like where Every came from, where my first, not my first, this company, my first company was 10
not
years ago.
One.
I don't know.
Not that one.
Yeah. Where Every came from is from Prehype, which so I owe you and Henrik, the other partner, a big debt of gratitude for that. In addition
it's
to
the best types of debts of gratitude when other sides of the coin feel that they are the ones who owe the debt of gratitude. So I suppose we're a mutually assured destruction there.
Or gratitude, whatever.
Yeah, whatever the, what, yeah. That gets a little too close to MAGA, so we'll stick with it. Yeah.
And you have incubated, Every is obviously one of your illustrious examples, but you've also incubated 50 other startups, including BarkBox, Row, Public.com for them, Ferry, and Headway. And like one of the things that I think is most interesting about you is you've been very early to like the two biggest technology trends over the last decade and a half. So your first company, Bazno, was a electronic badge company before NFTs were a thing. So you like you totally like called the NFT thing like 10 years ago ish.
Yeah. laughably so. I have to basically say to everyone who comes upon some version of that conversation that, like, unfortunately, NFTs pre-blockchains is like the most laughable set of sentences you could imagine.
Yeah, I guess you were too early in the sense that the blockchains were not around, but still, you had the concept.
Yeah, at least we were mining Bitcoin as a result of it and mined a block. So NYC BitMinter is in the blockchain.
There you go. Part of history. You were also like just really into GPT-3, like in 2020 ish when
all 2020. Yeah.
And I got to say, like when you were first starting getting into it, I was like, this is kind of interesting, but I don't know. Nicholas is like off the deep end again, like, you know, and you were so right. Like you freaking called it. And one of the things that one of the really interesting things about being so early is I think you've been able to like really understand what these tools are useful for and apply them in your life and in your business. And, you know, at Prehype, your job is to start and incubate companies. What you've done is you've actually gone and started a new company to help do more and better incubations with GPT-3 or GPT-4 now. And it's sort of like this interesting GPT all the way down thing where you're using ChatGPT to help you build the business. The business itself, the product itself uses GPT, the GPT API to serve your customers. And your customers are using ChatGPT or the GPT API to like build their businesses. So it's like, you're using AI to like the fullest extent that I think you possibly can in the result.
Yeah, maximalists or whatever the word is. Yeah.
And I think the results are like really sort of speaking for themselves. Like you told me in the pre-production call that like your goal is to help people go from zero to business, help your customers go from zero to having a business as quickly as possible. And with AI, that takes like 3 days now on average, where it used to take months or just wouldn't happen at all because they didn't have the skills to do it. And you're basically in this place with this company, it's called Autos, where you can't keep up with demand and you have thousands of people looking to pay you to help you build their businesses. And with like a 48-hour payback period, like it's kind of a crazy thing that you've discovered. And what I want to do today is go through this business that you've built and then talk about how you've built it with AI, and then how the product itself works with AI to serve customers. Because I think it's this like end-to-end use case of, I want to start a business with AI and I want to learn how to like leverage it to build stuff and to, even if I don't know how to code and to make products and make money online. And I think you're like the perfect person to like help walk people through that, because that's literally your job and you've done it yourself.
Yeah. And we've, as you're saying it, the interesting part is to me in just reflecting on it on the fly is there is both like AI native in our capability set. The way that we work is, AI is everywhere. And then there's also kind of, in the way we serve a customer and our interaction with our customer, AI is super native, and so we're sitting on both sides of that trade, which is very purposeful, in as much as we have been trying forever to just, remove as much of the edifice between, founder and customer as possible. Like that's both the advice I would give other founders is especially in the earliest phases to like, be as tight to your customer as possible. And you do that in two ways. One is obviously by like trying to talk to them and spend time with them. And so AI as a conversational force is an incredible power for staying close to your customer. But then you also do that by like not getting sucked back into the organization as much as possible. And so if you can imagine the amount of capabilities that if you can turn them over to AI and you don't have to like hire people that you then have to manage and spend time with, well then like definitionally you stay tighter to the customer too. And so it's like, it's both because of the way you interface with people and by not getting drawn back into the, into the org, that you stay close to the customer. So, for sure, we're just kind of like AI everywhere, not as like a buzzword, although happy to benefit from the buzzword if it's a benefit, but also just because like, I think it's a great way to spend time with customers.
That makes total sense. I would actually really love, like, can you show us?
Yeah, let's do like the normal.
Yeah, the business that you build and show it to us a little bit.
Yeah, as you mentioned, our core business has been helping entrepreneurs figure out what company to start next. And that we've tried like 100 different ways to do that. And, but like by call it, 2020, and having been in that roughly business for a decade, that looked like maybe we could a few times a year, like help someone start something. And that was because we needed to like have a good relationship with them and get to know them. And these things take time. But also it's because like practically speaking, there was a lot of work to in the way that we were doing it to do to kind of like help someone go from thinking about a couple different business ideas, framing them up in like a consistent enough way that you could even kind of like compare them apples to apples, going out and finding some early customers for those things and talking to them and synthesizing the results of those conversations. And then going out and finding like some more customers who are hopefully like strangers and talking to them in some way, probably less of like an actual conversation, more of some sort of, lead acquisition flow, all towards like helping create this dynamic for a founder where they were, as much as possible, not kind of a priori making judgments about which of their ideas were good ones, but instead like just building some early momentum and seeing if anything kind of like just stuck. Like ad absurdum, like we are feel like bad pickers of ideas, or maybe not bad ones, but just like that picking is hard. And that if you can just like go ahead and try things, that you end up learning a lot and like getting first party insights. And so everything about like what we've built with Autos is to try to like make that set of processes available to a much broader group of people. We actually didn't set out to do that. We set out to just like make our own process more predictable and repeatable, et cetera. And at the natural result of it, of course, is that if you encode it in software, then you can do more. And so the demo.
I want to stop you right there, because I think you just said something like really profound that that I've encountered too, and it sounds like we're sort of like. I always love when two people like have similar insights from maybe without having talked, like they've come to the same conclusion. And the thing that you said about like we're not great pickers, or maybe we're average pickers or whatever. But it's always better to like to go out and like try something to know if it works. The thing that resonates so much for me about that is I think it relates very deeply to what you're probably about to show, and also what I've seen AI do for people. Like when I try to figure out when I try to get that core of like what's most useful, is that for any project that you want to do, you can go and show it, like show how it would work and start getting feedback on it and getting hype or whatever you want, whether that's software, whether that's filmmaking, whether that's art, like whatever. You can just do that like in a couple hours, whereas before either it would have taken a long time and you would have had to have a lot of skills and a lot of whatever, or you would have had to be able to convince someone to invest in you to like fund your movie, to like get all the cameras and the director and whatever, or you would have had to get someone to fund you to go and hire engineers to like make your app. And I think the like one of the core things that's happening is we're moving into this world where anyone can just like make that little thing to like show their work, to show someone how amazing the thing in their head is without having to convince them. And it's really hard to convince people of things, but if they can see it, you might get a reaction and things might get funded or get made that never would have been able to be made before. And I think that's sort of what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's the, like the prototype is worth 1,000 decks, you know, type of mindset in there. And I completely agree. And not to like, we've been working on a book. One of the things that I just will call out to that is to your point here, is that to me, one of the profound implications about, you know, of that dynamic is not just true in terms of how you get started with things, but is also true of how you operate them, you know, over time. And, you know, the point being that like, yes, that's true of how you get started. It's also true of, like once you're starting and the practice of continuing to, you know, build things, because, you know, imagine that one of the reasons that a entrepreneur goes from being kind of like an entrepreneur to being, you know, a CEO with big company problems over time is that they are no longer like the first draft maker within their company. And so one of the things that we have been thinking about is like, what happens if you can be the first draft maker longer as someone working on something? And arguably, in our view, it like helps you stay close to your customer, but which is important. But in general, you know, like rarely is it that like I think we can all intuit that if the founder or CEO could stay close to their customer longer, that would be very valuable, right? And it doesn't mean that they would have all the ideas, but like at least they could have contribute more of the ideas, right? And so anyway, so these kind of hybrid concepts in my mind are really important in terms of both sitting in the customer service seat longer, I guess I'd call it, i.e. just being a little bit closer to the conversation that your organization or your, you know, business or product or project is having with your customer. You know, if you can just hang on to that a little longer, stay a little bit closer to that, obviously your information flow improves. But then to your point, if you can use those tools to create more first drafts, just like the fidelity of what you create as a CEO is less of this, like, you know, I like we talk about this like concept that, you know, if you sit there as a running a big organization and all you do is you like create this big vision and then other people go off and create proposals as to how to achieve it. And then there's like the quote unquote big meeting at the end. You know, that's just like a very difficult organizational model to make work, you know, or like it works, but it's like definitionally a big company thing. And so I'm so interested in what happened. I mean, this is like looking forward, really. It's like what happens when you have companies where the founder CEO and or the founding team is just more often and for a longer period of time, the ones making the first drafts, like then what, you know? And I think what you'll find is there are just really interesting, like, you know, downstream implications of that, but we'll find out.
That. No, I think that's great. It reminds me a lot of, it's not the exact same thing, but there's that book about how Apple builds products and it's all about prototypes and demos. And it sort of reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, totally. Okay. So autos. So I was kind of like going into this background of autos. So autos currently lives primarily, and I guess I'll just do a quick demo here, Dan, and then you yell if something we should do differently. So autos currently lives primarily in an Instagram, you know, DM. And so it's an AI you can imagine.
Wait, why did you start there? So it's a DM AI bot. Why did you start with a bot in DMs?
Yeah. We started with a bot and a DMs because distribution, like, what do you know, matters, you know? And Facebook has introduced, as of like last fall, a product to acquire people straight into a conversation. And that was like a dream come true for people who like spend a lot of time using the word talk to your customers. You know, like if you're in the business of telling people and yourself trying to talk to your customers, well then like, where do you do that? Where you can have kind of like a persistent conversation and not have to like install some new behavior for people where they come, you know, into your app, which is like laughably difficult to do, you know? And so I think the question was like, could we actually just make a version of a chat experience that would live inside of Instagram so that we could both take advantage of like Facebook's products as well as, frankly, just do something that was natural and native to our customer. And so, you know, that's where that decision got like made for us. We had these like on-site versions. In fact, at some point I was like talking to a journalist and they're like going through some, they're like, why does this work this way? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, and they're using some version of a product they found online from like 6 months ago. I was like, oh, crud. Like that's not the right one. You need to go over to Instagram. We start with a conversation. So people find us there. We do have like a following and, you know, I don't know, we got thousands of followers who have traditionally, you know, we were publishing these like business book little videos and shorts. And that was like, just to build up a little bit of like audience and whatever, but people do come and find us there. But mostly we just acquire people. We run ads that say varying versions of like, you know, do you want to like start a company or,
do you have an example?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, we run ads that are things like, you know, that little business idea you have, like, it'll still be an idea next week, or you can let our AI make you an AI and go from
zero.
I think that's probably,
I would click that. I like that a lot.
You know, we do a lot of that kind of stuff, and we're testing into more like and different creative, but what happens here is, very quickly we do a few things. One is we anchor and the AI is trained to like request a name from you, the entrepreneur. And so what we learned over time is that like, yeah, obviously when you start to create, chat experiences, like where you start matters a lot, especially if what you're trying to steer towards is like a fixed outcome. And in our case, we have some very fixed outcomes that we want to be able to deliver so that this is not just chat for the sake of chat. It's like, it's chat for the sake of calling a function, and we can get as wonky or not about that as we want. But like, suffice it to say that June 13th of last year, when, you know, OpenAI comes out with, you know, function calling now tool, you know, kind of calling was a big deal for us. But so we try to get you to name a person. Again, that's like a very basic, that has nothing to do with AI. That has to do with like our own sensibility that the type of business that we feel we can help people start. But maybe in general, like, you know, the way we happen to know how to help people start companies, certainly not the only way, but the way we know, is to, you know, help them really like kind of deeply imagine who the person is that they're going to serve. And almost with the unsaid truth that if you do not know that person, or they're not in your phone book, or a few of them maybe are not in your phone book, like you're going to have an uphill battle. Whereas if you can kind of cultivate founder customer fit, if you can, you know, actually like take this knowledge of someone, and it could be in even yourself really, and turn that into an initial product offering, and then build an entire kind of company that, you know, protects and cultivates your fit over time, that, you know, really interesting things start to happen. But anyway, so this person provides a name of their customer. You can tell that this person has thought about this because once we ask them the next question, which is, what does the customer need or want but can't get? What's stopping them from getting it? They've provided a detailed answer. So they say in this case that Camden, their customer, wants to save to buy a home. And this is really just to get a little bit deeper into like, what is the problem? And so it provides a couple of different options as to like, what are some other interpretations of the problem, where obviously our perspective is that if you can, you know, be very precise about the problem you're trying to solve, it just makes coming up with a solution easier. That's true generally. Again, it's also true in how well the GPT can do in providing interesting solution alternatives. And then in this case, we'll pitch a series of potential solutions, which are really just across like a bunch of different business models and solution styles, like what, you know, what, how could we think about solutions for this? And rarely are they mutually exclusive. You know, we pitch, you'll see the first one is software. The next one's like a platform or a network. The next one is kind of a product, a physical product. The next one is some sort of financial product. The next one is some sort of kind of content problem. So they're all these different angles. And most of the time what happens is people say, oh, well, it's a little bit of that and it's a lot of this. And maybe it's a touch of that. But within those three or four questions, what we then move on to is the GPT-R tool will say, okay, great, give me a second. And I'm going to try to kind of frame this up in a presentation. And so what happens now in the background is a set of GPTs really are running a variety of processes that all then lead to contributing to the creation of a little presentation, which works through high level, like what's the context? A couple slides on like what context does this problem and customer exist in? If we kind of restate the problem, how would we...
Wait. This is kind of crazy. So like, basically, you acquire a customer with an ad saying, I want you, do you want to start a business? And the customer's like, yeah. And then you ask them a couple questions with GPT through Instagram. And then like five questions in, they just get an automatically generated, I mean, this deck looks really good, like beautiful deck. Are there any humans? Are you involved in like Wizard of Oz-ing any of this, or is it all like automated?
You know, no. You know, every once in a while something breaks and someone starts yelling and we have to go like, you know, hit a button or something to restart things. You know, like Google times out our permissions on the Google Slides, like little API. It's not really the Google Slides API. It's an app script if you want to get wonky and like we have to re-permission it. That's probably been the key thing that keeps, you know, comes up once every 3 weeks and is the type of thing where like it's not working for a couple customers. I'm like, what's going on there? I'm like, why did we not put down a list that says don't forget that? That's all automatic. And so, yeah, let's just go through super fast, because what we do is we talk about the context. We talk about the problem. We then have had a little GPT go off and think about like, you know, defining at every level, like what are the words that would describe the iconography for this business? And then over time, then using some models, not DALL-E in this case, to make a little, you know, icon. What should we call this? Which we do based on actually a process whereby we figure out like who are the heroes of the people of these customers? Like who are some celebrities or scientists or whatever that these people might look up to, and then what would they call this business? And so we have like all these different processes that are running in the background. Obviously, we had to pick a color palette because this one is browns and greens and whatever, and other ones are, you know, different colors. And so then we work through. We've had these sub agents go off and do these various, you know, jobs. We go through a user journey or attempt to kind of frame up what is this solution and then how would someone experience it, all the way through to kind of what would you think about as being the key benefits and how much would you charge for that? How many people are out there that might want this? And so in the background, a Google search has been run to go look for, you know, data and to source data. Obviously, we can then take like how many people times how many much would they pay and at least like start to think about the size of this opportunity. And then we create like a to-do list, but all of which, yeah, again, yes, happens automatically and happens in, I don't know, you know, if as long as GPT-4 is not too backed up, it happens in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes.
Like the thing that feels really magical to me about this is it's like seeing your idea come to life in this, like in a couple of questions is so cool. It must be so validating, because I feel like there are so many people out there that have these ideas and have never seen them like actually in the real world, because they don't have the time or they don't have the skills or whatever. And even though this isn't the real product yet, just like seeing a deck with your logo and your problem like played out like this, I think is probably a huge moment for people.
I think so. I mean, maybe just to give you some stats, but stats are kind of like useless until you feel them. But I think these are things we feel. And so therefore, I think the stats give better talking points. It's something like 60 to 65% of people who, if you ask them, have had a business idea. And it's the same number of people. And this is true both in the US and I think globally, who say that they have the resources and the experience and the knowledge to start a business. So then you have this question, but 8% of people or something like that start a business in any given period. So you have a big gap. You basically have 60% of people who have had ideas and separately think that they have the resources, the knowledge, and the experience to do it. And then you have like basically 90% lossiness, you know, and it's like, why is it lossy? Some portion of that I think we can think is probably a good thing. But like, you know, generally speaking, I think it has a lot to do with like not knowing where to start, having way too many things to potentially make progress on such that you don't end up making progress on any of them. And so, yeah, like to your point, I think if we can just start to play things back to people, put them in edit mode, not creation mode, a little bit more often, it just allows the like little early bits of momentum to build on themselves. And, you know, momentum is oxygen for these types of things. So you give a lot of chance that something might stick. If you can get people out of their own heads and give them a little bit of a way of working. Yeah.
That makes sense. So, okay. So I think I get the deck. I think this is awesome. What is like, once you've built the deck, like what
so
is
what
the
happens?
Next step?
Yeah. What happens? So the first thing you can do is obviously you can like play back into it. This person did not do that. I think he just said, okay. But
you, just okay. Like, give me a little kudos there, man.
Well, he says okay, but then I think he goes, and yeah, he actually, sorry. No. He said okay to, I'm going to make a deck. And then he said, looks great. Keep going.
Okay.
Cool. And so that's very, very, very common. People do have like, you know, feedback that they'd like to give. And yeah, so let me just go find quickly here, like a link to this guy's feedback. You know, if he had asked for it, the co-pilot would have just gathered up a few of the key kind of assets. One of the things we've also learned is like trying to give you full, I mean, by the way, they can just duplicate that deck and then they can take it and make whatever edits. And sometimes right. The co-pilot's a little cheeky and will. When it finds the comments to be a little bit too specific, it'll say, you know, why don't you just go ahead and duplicate
do
a copy
yourself.
Of that? Yeah. which again, you and I, Dan, will appreciate from having written decks like these with a lot of different people.
I wish I could have said that.
Sometimes that's a very human, the human and the correct answer to the question, right? At which point he would have arrived on a little interface where he could have edited the icon, for example. So he might say, you know, I don't, I needs to have a home or, you know, tall home. And at least, it'll go off and, you know, create new ones for him. And he could rename it and he could pick new, you know, you could pick new fonts and new colors and things like that. So, you know, if he wanted to say, this is the one I'd like, then, or, you know, he could go do that. It's obviously got something in it around kind of mountains and things. And so he could do that. He can also go and say, yeah, that's not quite the way I want to like pitch this. And so we have this kind of elevator pitch version of it, which is actually a lot of what was generated as the underpinning of the whole deck. And so we do that anyway. So he could do that and then he'd make his saves and then he regenerates everything. From there, a couple things will happen. One is, he does make a small payment here. And then as soon as he's done that, we do a few things. So the first is that we do make him a landing page.
Wait, what is the small payment? Just like
what, he makes a $30 payment, okay. In this case to basically move on to the next step.
Okay. Which is gathering customer feedback.
Which is basically a set, exactly right. It's a set of tools to allow you to start to talk to your customers. And so there are really two sides of that. The first is to set yourself up, I should say, to talk to strangers. And so we do this now. It's a little bit actually inverted in order, but we do it basically because I think this feels very real to people to have like a website created. So in addition to having had his deck created, this is a website that was made for him, where it took obviously a lot of the assets and the copy and other kind of concepts from the slides, and it made it a deck. It does go on in the conversation, by the way, in the next set of conversation, it'll ask him like, okay, well, let's find a URL for a domain for this. And so it did go buy this domain and register this domain for him. So that's kind of like one part of it. The second part of it is that we will also, well, actually there's two sides of that. So one is that, then actually what he also gets is his own GPT. And so imagine that he can start acquiring leads just as we acquired him. He can now start to acquire leads into a conversational experience that will that will chat to his customers and can both kind of like use a conversational model to qualify them, much as we are doing with, you know, our customers, but also to begin to like sell them on the different parts of the product and the experience that he's envisioning. And so the kind of website plus the this hosted GPT that we've created for him is really part of, and then a set of assets that we create to help him go run an ad campaign are like the part of how you go get strangers. Before we do that, and again, it's inverted only in the presentation here because of two things. One is I happen to pick a demo that's a few weeks old. But second of all, it is kind of like feels more like something you want to buy these external facing assets. And then we back you into the hard work or a slightly harder bit of work that you need to do for yourself, which is that we ask him to go off and interview himself, basically to complete an interview from the perspective of the customer. And also to, and then we also ask him to share this with a few of his friends. And so what this is something that more like orients towards collecting feedback from the people you already know who might be potential customers of this product before you go into the business of like talking to strangers. And this is a voice, oriented chat that goes through basically the need finding kind of playbook that you might be taught if you go to the D school at Stanford or something like that, and you're trying to kind of really get into what's the problem. And so here I might say, yes, I fit that profile. I am trying to buy a new home. And so this will initiate a conversation between me and the GPT. And then lastly, it will actually take every one of these conversations that I have, and it will with my or that the GPT has with my friends, let's call it, and it'll synthesize them into a basically a product roadmap. So it'll use these conversations to help kind of identify what are the key features of this potential product, and then to play them back to you and organize them in a dashboard.
This is truly wild. Like, I knew you had a lot of AI stuff, but this is a lot more than I expected. This is great. I'm like, there's this sort of like end-to-end process of like start with a couple questions to a deck to a like a website to a little wizard that can like help you like modify a couple different things to a like customer interview thing that will you get a bunch of interviews and then it will create a product roadmap to like running ad campaigns,
run some camp choir.
I mean, that's freaking crazy. I want to move into like how this all works. Like, how do you build this? How do you make the like crazy mashup of models that makes this possible? Because like, I've built a lot of this stuff before, and like, it's really hard to get it to work well enough to do stuff like this. And I'm just super curious to understand how you're actually doing it. How is it architected?
I hope you're not tired of all the AI, because unfortunately the answer to it is that we use a lot of AI to make.
Why did I know that was coming?
Yeah. That was actually what kind of came up in our pre-conversation that was, as with many things, when you start talking to someone about them or you hold them at a little bit of distance, you kind of realize about yourself is, you asked, and I think your normal like production doc is to talk about like, how do I chat GPT? Like, the way I chat GPT is to make this. And I think it's probably relevant to say, I've never taken a computer science class in my life. I don't know anything about computer science. Prior to ChatGPT, I never particularly programmed anything. Maybe I'd like messed around in a Jupyter notebook and, done some like data science or whatever you want to call that, which is really just like a glorified way of running longer Excel functions on, bigger data sets than Excel could handle, right? So I was basically taking whatever financial learning I had and applying it to a bigger data set. So ChatGPT has been completely like, revolutionizing to me of being able to run, write code. And I, for like programmers, I know that what I create is not, per se code, but does function, it does work, and it does deliver a result. And therefore,
that's code.
That's to be code, so I've written, I've generated many, many more lines of code in the last, year and a half than than I'd ever generated in my whole life combined. And that's because I just think it's magical that you can say, like, this is what I kind of want to do. Can you like write me the first version of a script? And then you can plug that script in and run it and then just paste the error message. And slowly but surely, if you're patient enough, you can get there. And so basically everything you're looking at so far, absent the customer interviewing stuff, was stuff that I prototyped by talking to ChatGPT. It's been productionized in a variety of ways, so it doesn't fully resemble, but I for sure, most of that like processes, the system design certainly, and some of even like the scripting concepts are very much still there. And so I think maybe what we can do is just look at one of the new features that we're creating, or one of the things we're trying to prototype, which is to make the launching of those custom GPTs. So you're a customer, you come in, we want to be able to have you have your AI copilot that you can use to talk to your customers as quickly as possible. Currently, it does still require some manual work, but I am in the process right now of prototyping that in my prototyping framework, so that I can then hand it to the real engineers and have them, once it's working, and say, hey, can you please make this? And so if it makes sense, we can just go do that right now. And
let's do that. I want to see it. Let's go.
Frankly, it'll use me. It'll be a productive period for me. Okay. So like this is a very typical thing that I would spend a lot of time doing in ChatGPT. Which is, you'll see here, I've basically just copied and pasted a script that I have running, in this case, in an Airtable, where I do a lot of my work, because it's like the most intuitive combination for me of like a database that I can write to and read from, but that like I can also provide anyone access to, and they have kind of like, you know, GUI. I just wish that Airtable would, if anyone from Airtable is listening, if you could please extend the timeout on a script beyond 30 seconds, I would no longer have to use Google Cloud Functions. That would be great. Thank you. And so I do stuff where I like paste this whole thing in, and I just say, hey, this is what I want to change. Can you change that? And so you it'll actually go and write the response and fix it and do whatever. And so I mean, yes.
Okay. Frame this up for me a little bit, like at the top. So
yep.
Tell me about like where.
Yeah, no, I will. Let me just go into an Airtable quickly, yeah, so I can give you even more context.
Yeah.
All right. So the job that we need to do right now, you, me, and Dupree, is to do the following, which is we are going to take. I have two jobs to do, really. One is that in order to do this, the way that we've like spec'd out the system. So let's just talk you and like we need to, one, update a DNS record for this person's website by API in order to have it point to the server where we're hosting these GPTs for folks. So one part of the job is to create a new subdomain for them, which let's just say is going to be, until they ask us otherwise, gpt.theirdomain.com. So we've bought the domain and registered it. It is on our registrar. We have API access to it. So one little job to do is to go off and call the DNS simple API to update the DNS records to take the subdomain and point it at our IP address. The second thing to do is we have to make, for each one of these, we have to make an Airtable. We could do anything, but it's a database in this case that we provide to the entrepreneur so that they have an easy way of seeing, for example, who are the people that are coming and talking to my GPT? Where is that information being saved? Can I see the chat history? And Airtable is at least like the place where we've decided to do that for the moment, where because it's easy, if we can send them a link, they go in, they have their own, it's their own little proto CRM, if you will, that's starting to be populated for them. But to do that, we have to automatically, like if we really want it to be automated, we have to automatically generate a new Airtable. And it has to have columns that match to what the GPT's instructions are in terms of what information it's looking to collect. So let's say you and I went through this and we were creating one, or let's stick to our guy, Alec. He wants to collect information about, do you own a home or not? Have you saved it all for your home? If so, in what format? How much have you saved? Well, so to make it automatic, we have to have a GPT that has those instructions to look for that information. We have to have it have defined the schema of the database that it's going to write to. And we have to then create that database to match that schema so that it all functions properly. And so I don't know how to do any of those things other than if I ask ChatGPT to help me, you know. So what you are seeing there in this case is, let me just go back to my, so like, for example, what I was working on right there when I pulled up my ChatGPT screen, let's just expand this a little bit, was a script that ChatGPT wrote, obviously, duh, wherein we define we are going to create a new Airtable base. And so this is a database schema writing. Let's just find the instructions, because basically that will tell you what it does. I'm not even giving it instructions right now because I give it this very detailed function call. But this is just a bunch of code that says, this is, we're going to make a table within Airtable. You got to give it a name. You have to give it a this, you have to give it a that. And then what you'll see here is that it responded when I tested this with a long thing that set up a new table for this concept echelon with a table inside of the base called leads and with a couple different columns. They need a name and a phone number and these different things. And so what I was doing right there in ChatGPT was just, I needed to update it because we actually need two tables inside of our Airtable base. Let's go to the actual Airtable that we're going to make. I needed one of them to be called leads, where we're going to save that information. And then I need another one to be called chats, where we save just the raw content of the chat. And it's not doing the second part yet. And so what I asked it to do here is I said, I'd like to create the JSON schema to provide for the creation of a second table in each base that it's like, and again, this makes no sense to you. I can barely even spit this out, but obviously ChatGPT is magical because it actually understands this and then gives me the correct answer, right? So I said, the second table should be called chats and it should have two columns of the type single line text, chat ID and chat. And then I literally just pasted, I took this whole thing, I copied it, I pasted it in here. You can see that it's kind of like not nicely formatted, et cetera. And then OpenAI is nice enough to say, okay, like to do that, we need to do the following. And here is the modified portion of your script that would allow you to do this. And it's pretty close. By the way, I'm lazy enough to say, hey, instead of like here, it said like, go ahead and reproduce the part that's already in here. My programming is sufficiently bad that I like would be nervous to do this and that I'd mess up the spacing and things like that. And so I just ask it to redo it and it does the whole thing for me. And then I'll just go paste that back in here and try it and it'll probably throw an error. And then I copy paste the error back in here and probably within two backs and forths, like we'll have a correct answer. And then I move on.
I mean, I love it. That's amazing. Like, okay. I'm kind of curious about like, if you're not really totally understanding what's going on, how are you guiding yourself through whether ChatGPT is doing the right thing? Is it just sort of like you check it and if it seems to work, it works? Or like, what are the...
I think I've obviously gotten like a slightly better, you know, sense of this now that I've done it a lot, right? Like I'm sure that I do try to like read. I'm not going to say that I'm like trying to teach myself how to do these things. I don't see it ever being a productive use of my time to start with a blank sheet of paper or a blank sheet of screen and start writing to it. That's just not like where I'm going to, you know, spend my time. But to the extent that, you know, I want something generated quickly, it feels like it's pretty good at it. And I can, once you've made the mistake a few times, you can tend to be pretty like smart about what the mistake is that you're making and try not to make it again. And so in that case, for example, I know that if I took that code, if I hadn't read it, I know for sure they try to like excerpt something because it's trying to not generate too many tokens and whatever. And so it like comments out like a section and it's like, hey, just plug that section in there. And I've always like, well, I think I know what section you want in there, but I'm not positive. And it will take me more time to go do that than just to burn more tokens. So can you go do it? I think that's probably the main thing. The second thing is it's so good at like, you know, when I was preparing, my process is really probably a three-step process. One is try to come up with what's the output that you want ChatGPT to create. So in this case, obviously it's code, but it could be when we were building the initial part of our system, it's like, imagine that we had to come up with a color palette for the slides, right? Or for the brand of this thing. well, like, what is the color palette of a given, you know, new idea, and how would you come to that? And so I spent a bunch of time with ChatGPT just going back and forth, like, if I tell you this, like, then can you propose a color palette? And then I'd have to say, oh, well, you know, and lo and behold, it's pretty good at actually, you could say to ChatGPT, give me neon volt yellow a la the Nike brand in hex. No problem. Gives you the correct answer or something very close to it. So like one of these amazing things where like, I have no idea what the hexadecimal notation of volt yellow is. I know how to like pick it on a color picker, but I don't know how to like, you know, like I would never generate off the top of my head. So it has no problem in this like weird space between natural language and code or versions of like, you know, machine readable information. And so anyway, so I would basically go through a process, say, hey, can you make a color palette? Oh, well, basically it needs to describe it first. And then I need to get it translated to hexadecimal, you know, notation. And then I need to get it into a JSON object. And so finally I would arrive at this instructions set. That's basically like, your job is to take the following input and turn it into the following JSON object, which has a text-based description of the color palette, as well as three, you know, hexadecimal references of to like what the color is. And then I'm going to take that and I'm going to do something else with it, you know? And so then you would basically like, now let's say that you need to go make a logo with those colors. Okay, well now you got to call a new API. So I'd often just go copy and paste like huge chunks of open API documentation from some random service that I found to do some job, right? And I would paste it in and I'd say, you know, how do I format a call to this API if I know that I need to provide it these things? And then it would do that. And then finally I would say, okay, now write me a script that I can run in Airtable, for example, that would allow me to do that when something else happens, assume that I can take care of the automation. And so we do a lot of that kind of stuff.
That's really interesting. So I guess if I had to summarize like how this is all working, is Airtable sort of like a core thing where it's like it's the source of truth. It's the database that you can, people can interact with. You can interact with it. Your customers can interact with it. And it's like this, the first building block. And then, Airtable has these automations, these scripts that can run based on different actions that happen. So if someone adds a record or if something changed, like it can launch a script. And what you're doing is you're using ChatGPT to basically build whatever that automation is to program, like, okay, someone fills out a form and it goes into the Airtable. We send them an email saying you need to pay or whatever. And ChatGPT is writing the script and then helping you connect to third-party services that are like other building blocks that you might have, like Stripe or like any of these other things. So you're kind of like, it's sort of like...
And that's certainly how we prototype things. And then obviously if once something is being done enough times, then we'll move it into it. Like, and we run our main system now on Supabase, but it has a very similar set of features in terms of a DB with these edge functions, which are not dissimilar from the script running capabilities of Airtable. So Airtable to me is like the lightweight place that either I as a novice or our customers can hang out, and then we can productionize things over time. Yeah.
Right. Okay. No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Like, and I think it's such an interesting model for people who are thinking about like, okay, how do I get started with this stuff? How do I prototype stuff? It's like an Airtable with ChatGPT is sort of the glue that connects you to all these other third-party services that can be like, it's like Lego, you're stacking Lego bricks together. And then you have something that functions. And once it functions, then you can be like, okay, maybe I should hand this off to like a professional developer that can actually
do that. Or, you know, and also I think it puts a lot of pressure on like what the delivery model is. I mean, ChatGPT, I think, has done a great favor to entrepreneurs and people trying to build projects. And certainly something that we are leveraging for our, you know, for our customers, which is that like, you know, you and I know that the minute that you start trying to design UI and do wireframes of like new services, the minute that a GUI is involved, I mean, you slow your pace of development down massively, right? Like on silly stuff, silly, but like important stuff. Like, oh, where's the forget password button? And what is your forget password experience look like? And, oh, well, actually, maybe we should just do two-factor so we don't even have to have a, well, how does that, like, what does the screen look like if someone, where does the button go to request a new code? Like you've just wasted like days at a time on not even, you haven't even gotten past the login and you're back and forth with stuff, you know? So I think what resonates with me about what you played back is like, yeah, if you can get something functioning, you can also often like make the hard decisions about, do I really need that GUI to like, you know, present that? Or could I just put it in a text message to my client or whatever? And then is the service just something that kind of runs in the background for them, but delivers them this thing? And if it is something that I need to deliver, is there some really like lightweight way for me to do it? So I think it is a really empowering thing to have this little, yeah, combination of a database that you can implement, you know, play with in the form of Airtable, but also this has this kind of scripting layer on it, which ChatGPT is just so good at writing these scripts, you know, like it's just logical that they exist all over the internet and it's pretty good at creating.
I love it. I love it. That makes a ton of sense. So I'm obligated to ask this, but you don't have to answer it if you don't want to. But because it's on the screen, it's sort of my professional responsibility to ask you what AI Copilot MLM strategy is.
Oh, I was looking at, well, when we were talking about like how to, well, let me just find it. I mean, I don't know that we took it that far, or, you know, we'll see. But that was a good example. I was trying to come up with, I think it's higher up in the thing, but you didn't, I can't believe you didn't ask about Panther versus Grey Wolf.
That was coming next.
I'm going to start with Panther versus Grey Wolf because I'm going to try to make a slightly more meta point. This is obviously something I do with my son. My 5-year-old son is like obsessed with animals, and we run this game at Infinitum, and I am so grateful to ChatGPT for this, because I've saved a lot of money on these books that you can buy on Amazon that compare random animals, but that fail the next test, which is like, obviously he reads the Great White Shark versus Orca book that's been published, but then he's like, what if a orca fought a, you know, a sperm whale? And you're like, oh, well, they don't have that book, you know? And so ChatGPT is great at this. I have realized that, and in just preparing to talk to you, that a lot of the way that I kind of, if what we just have discussed a lot is how I work with ChatGPT, a lot of the way I think with ChatGPT is to try to basically say, I'm thinking about these two things, and I'd like you to talk, like, I'd like to kind of go through a dialectic with you where we define them, or we list the pros and cons of them independently, and then where we like crash them together and merge them and whatever. And I think that, like, honestly, it's in my own review, it's a way that ChatGPT, I feel, does a lot more for you than if you just go into this like linear conversation where you say, I'm thinking about X, and like it almost has no frame of reference for like, what are the opposites? In fact, sometimes it'll ask you like, what are the alternatives? And so I just try to like start with it. Also, because if you give it two kind of like almost seemingly very, you know, distant things, it takes you seriously. It doesn't tend to say like, why would you ever compare AI and an MLM strategy? Like it tends to take it, like it takes it seriously. And so it tries to then do the work. And it's like work that often I don't think I'd have the discipline to do alone. Even if I could say, oh, well, like I should really spend 30 minutes like going through what makes for an MLM strategy and what are the characteristics of it and how would you merge that with a, you know, this thought process and whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, I think in this case, like all that.
Well, Panther versus Grey Wolf, like what, I mean, we got to.
Oh, Panther versus Grey Wolf, I think they're formidable predators. Let's see.
Yeah.
The outcome. Considering the Panther's greater size, strength, and lethal ambush tactics, it might my son would be very happy for this. He's a feline over canine sympathist.
Interesting.
I mean, in this case, I just did a thing where I'd like asked it to. In this case, I don't think I did the kind of dual model. Although were we to go through this again, I would definitely do this because I have some alternatives in mind. But I was basically just trying to think about, you know, in our case, obviously we've had people who are trying to refer our product to other entrepreneurs in their network and asked us, you know, do we have like referral codes and things like that? And so I was just trying to kind of like imagine, is there a way, are there any versions of like an MLM that are not, you know, like too mean or exploitative? And if so, like what would be the, you know, what would be the way that you would like think about that?
Interesting. And ChatGPT is not going to judge you for asking that question, but someone else might.
Importantly, ChatGPT is not going to judge you for asking that question. And in fact, again, to the point, like takes it quite seriously and tries to like go into, you know, these different mechanics. And then I think you have the ability, therefore, you know, if you kind of take this in earnest to, I actually, in this case, obviously didn't follow up, but what I would normally do here is say things like, okay, well, you know, I'm really most interested in, let's just say, you know, I'm most interested in the downline concept and how that would, you know, work for me. I might even say things like, what does the typical downline agreement look like for a MLM participant? And can we draft one? And I guess I do stuff like that where I just try to like be way more result oriented, way faster than I would normally be too, because it can often, you know, do such a good job of creating the thing. And then I find that that helps like imagine, you know, the output. But
I love it. I'm just thinking about, I'm just have that video of, you know, Jim from The Office, and he's like drawing the like pyramid thing, and then he's going like this.
I mean, you know, I don't know. I, suffice to say, given that I didn't have a particularly in-depth conversation with ChatGPT, I'm not sure how far this thought process will go. But,
no, I think it's really
at least now I have my downline agreement I can use if necessary.
I'm, you know, if you need you need your first customer, let me know.
First mega, you know, and just to be really. It's a full circle. We had a couple of MLMs issuing digital badges on our badge issuing platform. Right. they were the social media cred du jour in 2013 for women in particular who are interested in flexing their MLM muscle.
I love that. Cool. Well, we're getting pretty close to our time, and I want to kind of like back up and talk about what we've talked about and leave people with a message, and also like point them and direct them toward what you're doing to Autos, to the book you're writing, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I think like at a high level, what I'm observing is you have this business that you've run for 10 years helping entrepreneurs start companies. And then you have created a system that effectively scales this like non-scalable business using like 50 different AI tools that you have built yourself using AI. And you've basically abstracted yourself away from that process and created this thing that a person with a couple of chat messages can create a pitch deck, a landing page, can start recruiting customers, like all that kind of stuff, which I think is like totally wild and really interesting. I don't think I've ever seen someone use AI so extensively, both in the sort of prototyping of the product and in the like actual product that they make, like weaving together all these different microservices that you built, basically, is I think is really cool. And for anyone who's like wanting to build a product, like this is a model, I think, especially if you're not technical, that is like a really good way to get started. What do you think? What do you think of that summary? Are there other things you want to like leave people with?
I think it's well summarized. I think AI can be a force for, you know, pushing entrepreneurship to new heights. And I think, and I guess I use the word entrepreneurship, and other people might use creativity or productivity or, you know, the different things, but I guess I use it as making something in service of someone else. And I just think that, and I've lived that now for a couple of years, just from wanting to do more of what we do to serve our customers. But I think everyone, you know, will get a whiff of it. Not to be like overly dramatic, I think we kind of need it. I think AI that is like bad for entrepreneurship, i.e. ones where people just like use the big models and outsource, you know, parts of their life, et cetera, as opposed to kind of, that's a very scary thing in my view. Whereas I'm kind of committed to this, but I think it's possible. I think it can be like just an amazing force multiplier for people's, you know, how people express themselves entrepreneurially speaking. And so, if anyone, I guess I'd say as like a call to arms or whatever, is like broadly interested in this stuff, like I'm here and want to chat with anybody. Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that. Like I love this as a tool for kind of creative expression for making things. And I think that's exactly what you're building for yourself and for other people. And I really love it. Where should people who are interested in connecting with you or using Autos or reading your book, like where should they find you?
Yeah, we're going to launch our book next month or so. That's Me, My Customer, and AI, in which most of any of this thought process will be kind of documented, worst case scenario. I think like, you know, I have a very, I can't say I post much on Twitter, but I will definitely post our book. So I'm ThornNY on Twitter. You go to autos.com and it'll redirect you to our Instagram place if you want to get started there. you know, Dan's got my phone number. So if you've got Dan's phone number, he can give you mine.
Great.
But I'm also Nicholas. I'm also Nicholas, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S at prehype.com. And pretty good at doing that too. So whatever works. And thank you for hanging out, Dan. As always, it's fun to, you know, share some of this stuff with you.
This was a pleasure. Really, really fun to spend time together. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too. That's every day there's something new. So that's the fun part for sure.
Oh my gosh, folks. You absolutely positively have to smash that like button and subscribe to How Do You Use ChatGPT. Why? Because this show is the epitome of awesomeness. It's like finding a treasure chest in your backyard, but instead of gold, it's filled with pure, unadulterated knowledge bombs about ChatGPT. Every episode is a roller coaster of emotions, insights, and laughter that will leave you on the edge of your seat, craving for more. It's not just a show. It's a journey into the future with Dan Shipper as the captain of the spaceship. So do yourself a favor, hit like, smash subscribe, and strap in for the ride of your life. And now, without any further ado, let me just say, Dan, I'm absolutely, hopelessly in love with you.